Welcome everyone to episode one of our multidisciplinary podcast. So the topic today is going to be psychology and the medical profession with Dr. James Mutafia. And thank you so much, James, for agreeing to be a part of what I think is a very important discussion, because we live in a time where we find that more often than not, many disciplines and professions and areas of study come together to resolve different social issues. And we find ourselves faced with these on a daily basis within our respective professions, within our respective areas of work. And that is the beauty of a multidisciplinary team and multidisciplinary collaborations, right? To be able to bring together different areas of specialties to resolve problems and to view the bigger picture from differing perspectives, but, being able to find also to learn about each other. And excuse me, the difficulties that other professions face, and to learn about the value of the work that others have within our own personal disciplines and professions. So the discussion today, like I said, is going to be medical, the medical profession and psychology. And we will be talking to Dr. James, who is a community medical practitioner, community doctor, currently stationed at Potchefstroom. Correct me if I'm
Yes,
wrong.
yes. Yes, I'm currently a community service doctor in Potchefstroom under the sub-district.
Okay, so before we get into the discussion, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what work you do?
Thanks, Matsapo. As mentioned, my name is James. I'm currently working in Potchefstroom. I studied at the University of Pretoria, did my 6-year degree there, and did my internship at the Klerksdorp Tipon complex for 2 years, and then started with my community service this year in Potchefstroom. I'm currently based at a small clinic in Ikageng, which is a township in Potchefstroom. Then for my overtime, on my calls, I work in Ventersdorp, which is sort of a district hospital, a bit bigger than my clinic. Yeah, that's mostly what I do for work. For fun, well, this year is mostly dedicated to studies, but I like all the activities. I love my coffee, and I read when I do have time.
Okay. And so getting a little bit more into your career, what influenced your career choice and why did you choose to pursue the medical profession?
I know most people, when asked that question, will give a single answer. So others would tell you they chose it because of their love for people. Others would tell you they chose it because of the financial benefits. Others would tell you they chose it because of the status or whatever. But for me, I think it's multifaceted. One, it was due to my strengths in school. I realized I was good at sciences and problem solving, subjects that involved problem solving, like pure math, and I enjoyed them. I had a desire to work with people, and I was also exposed to the health sector by my mother works in the health sector, so she took me to work a lot, and as a kid, it was a cheap way to babysit the 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid. You just leave him in the office. So I spent a lot of time in her office. I spent quite a lot of time in the hospital environment. And her being in the healthcare sector, most of our friends are also working in the sector. So either doctors, physios, nurses. So I think that also just indirectly directs my mind to that, to that goal. And also just a genuine love for people, a genuine love to see people get better, to help people.
I think that's mostly why most of us chose the helping professions, right? Is because we care so much about people. So you work in the health, in the public sector, and we know that employees working in the public sector are confronted with a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties just by virtue of the fact that they're working in the public sector where infrastructure is not at what you would refer or what one can refer to as preferred standards if you would compare a public hospital to a private hospital, for instance. So can you tell me what kinds of social issues have you come across in your work? What difficulties do you face regularly in your work?
Thanks for that question, Matsepo. I think just apart from working in the public sector, we're also working in a third world country, in a very under-resourced country. So social issues form a part of actually a huge contributor to our healthcare burden. Rather, a lot of issues we're having in our healthcare setting as a result of social issues. So whether if we start from the pediatric population, a lot of our patients we're seeing are coming in hospital because of social issues. So malnutrition because they're not being fed well. You know, the family doesn't have the means to feed this child well, you know. If now we look at adults, it's either abuse, so stuff related to abuse, whether it's abuse of women, it's violence in the community. These are all stemming from social issues, you know, issues as a result of unemployment, a lack of education. And now these bring about a lot of medical issues. So actually, a lot of the cases we're seeing in the public sector is or are a result of social issues, you know, whether it's teenage pregnancies, it's unwanted pregnancies. These are all tied to social issues.
And how do these social issues impact your ability to do your work efficiently and effectively?
They definitely make our work very difficult. Treating a patient is more than just about prescribing medication. So it's more than just diagnosing the problem and prescribing medication. If I'm going to have a patient who comes to my clinic who's taking HIV medication, and we give this patient this treatment and we tell him, listen, you take this treatment in the evening, and we give him some other tablets that he should take as well, and we tell him your next appointment is in a month's time. You must come for this appointment. One, we don't know whether that patient will come back for his appointment, not because he doesn't want to. I mean, I've had patients who've missed appointments and they genuinely tell you that, doctor, I don't have transport money to come to work. You know, the other issue is patients just don't have a lot of, I think, don't realize the magnitude of this problem. The average South African cannot afford 3 meals a day. You know, some patients who don't have food, they'll literally tell you, doc, I don't take my medication because I don't have food. If I take this medication on an empty stomach, I get sick. Therefore, I don't take my medication. So you see, even though we've diagnosed a problem, we've prescribed the treatment, it doesn't help if the patient cannot take the treatment, if the patient cannot come for follow-ups. This is something we're seeing a lot in our hospitals where patients are just not following up. You know, we give them dates and they just don't come, and some disappear out of the system. You'd hear that maybe they passed away, or they just, when they come in next time, they are brought by an ambulance when they are close to death, you know. So it's definitely making our work difficult. We are literally treating more than just the medical aspect. We're now dealing with social issues that are just making our work difficult.
And then how do you address such problems in your profession?
Luckily, at the hospitals that I worked in bigger hospitals. So when I was a student at Steve Biko, Okalafong, or Tembisa, we had social workers, social services that would help with a lot of these scenarios. Even at Klerksdorp and Tsepong, we had social workers, social services. So I gave the example of patients that don't have means to provide for themselves. So social services would help in arranging social grants for patients. They would help with arranging food parcels for patients. It would also help with just basic education of relatives. You know, sometimes a patient just needs his extended family to care for him, and they'll track down the relatives. The relatives would care for this patient, and that definitely improves the care. So I think one thing we can do is by involving people that are qualified to deal with that, who are social workers. You know, at times doctors don't have either the time or the ability to deal with these things. We aren't trained to deal with these issues, so it does help to have that. However, we have to face the fact that social workers are also very limited in our public health sector.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you mentioned working with social workers, because that is a perfect example of a multidisciplinary approach outside of the medical field. So I would imagine that within your profession, you work in a multidisciplinary team with other medical professionals, you know, but that is a perfect example to show that actually different professions can be included in resolving certain social issues. So that is like a brilliant example of what my subcommittee is about, which is the multidisciplinary subcommittee and addressing issues from a multidisciplinary perspective. So I mentioned that, you know, I imagine that you've worked with other doctors in a multidisciplinary team, but have you worked with psychology professionals? Have you engaged with them? And if so, in what capacity?
Yes. I think my first engagement was during my psychiatry rotation in internship at Vitrand Hospital. So Vitrand has this, and like you mentioned, they've got a multidisciplinary team. When a patient comes in, there'll be a social worker in the room, there'll be a psychologist in the room, there'll be a physiotherapist in the room, there'll be an occupational therapist in the room, and all of these would give feedback as to, you know, how their sessions are going with this patient, what they are doing for this patient. You know, the doctors will give their view, the occupational therapists will talk about what they're doing, the psychologists will talk about what they're doing. So that was my first encounter. But then after that, during my medical rotation as well, we dealt with clinical psychologists quite a lot in our parasuicide cases, in my surgical rotation as well. So yes, I have, and most of the times we consulted them, so we'd write a formal consult and they would come and see the patient and give their assessment, and if treatment was necessary, they would prescribe treatment as they thought fit.
And what then do you understand about the psychology profession from your encounter with psychiatrists, from your encounter with clinical psychologists?
I think to our shame, to the shame of most doctors and just the general population, would agree that our knowledge of what the scope of psychology is very limited. You know, if you ask the average guy on the street what they thought a psychologist does, they'll probably tell you they thought psychologists read minds or can read their thoughts or something, you know. So for doctors as well, we were, in my training as a student, we weren't really taught about what role psychology plays per se in the healthcare sector. It's only as we started working as interns did we now realize what role they played. And oftentimes would send wrong consults, and the psychologist would be like, no, but this is not my work, you have to send this to the psychiatrist. Or would send something to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist would be like, no, but this is not my scope, this has to go to the psychologist. So that's just a pre-comment, rather, just indicating how ill-knowledged we are about the profession. But I've really come to appreciate the role of psychology more this year. You know, a lot of my patients that have been seen in my clinic have had psychological issues, whether these patients struggling either with depression or suicidality or other psychiatric illnesses. I've seen patients have clinical psychologists that rotate at our clinics. And each time I refer my patients to her, you know, they come back feeling better. You know, they appreciate the session they've had. And like I've said, most of the times it's patients that have had struggling with mental issues, mostly as a result of social issues as well. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
And how has your patients going to see a psychologist affected how you treat them? Do you see a difference in how they present after they've seen a psychologist?
Most definitely. I think traditionally doctors were trained, or just we've been made to think that healthcare is just about seeing a doctor. We've been made to believe that a doctor will treat all your ailments. If you're sick, whatever, regardless of whatever you're suffering from, a doctor will treat that, which is not the case. You know, I've had patients that come with one illness, but this illness is being precipitated by another, by a different, totally different, unrelated issue. So we could give an example of an individual having a very stressful situation at home, you know, living in a very stressful environment, not physically, but maybe mentally, you know. That's now going to present anxiety. This patient might have uncontrolled blood pressure. So we as doctors could diagnose the patient of having blood pressure, but remember, this blood pressure is not the primary problem. This blood pressure is stemming from a different problem. So identifying those issues and then sending these patients to someone who can deal with those issues really helps a lot. Some of my patients have sought psychological help for their issues, and whenever they come back, it definitely helps with their treatment. Their blood pressure is better controlled because certain stresses, certain issues are identified in their lives and they're being controlled, which also helps us as doctors. Now I can lower the doses that this patient is on. And we actually find that maybe this patient didn't even have this so-called hypertension, you know, that we labeled this patient to have had before.
So what I'm getting from what you're saying is it's important to view the patient from a holistic approach as opposed to just purely a medical approach or a medical perspective.
Exactly, yeah. No. So a patient is not just, it's not just the heart, it's not just the liver that's failing. A patient is not just a toe that's gangrenous or an eye that cannot see. You know, a patient is not just an HIV positive case. You know, all of these stem from multiple issues. You know, if I've got a 25-year-old that's HIV positive and is a sex worker, and all I address is her HIV, I'm not treating this patient holistically. I need to find out, like, why is she a sex worker? Is she trying to make ends meet at home? You know, is she involved in an abusive relationship? Is she involved in some drug issues? You know, and all of those, addressing all of those issues is part of treating this patient. Me giving her this treatment, rather, we have to address the patient as a whole, and that actually helps with the management of the patient. You know, if I have a patient who's coming in with every month with scars that need to be sutured, you know, I have to address what's going on. Okay, why are you coming in every month with these stab wounds? What's going on at home? You know, what's going on in your private space? So what's going on in the workspace? You know, until we address those issues, this patient will just be a permanent resident, rather, in our emergency department. So yes, looking at the patient holistically, and not just the patient, but the community as well. You know, I've come to realize that we don't just treat patients, we treat the community as a whole. And that definitely does help with management.
Yeah, definitely. So have you then noticed instances where, I mean, this may be a little bit of a redundant question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Have you noticed instances where you're working and you would say, you know what, if we had a registered counselor in this situation, or if we had a psychologist helping in this situation, this service to this patient could actually be improved?
Yes, I have. I recently had a patient that I had to counsel about their HIV status. So this is a pediatric patient. This patient doesn't understand what HIV is. The patient was diagnosed, they received, you know, HIV, got HIV from their mother. Oh, the patient's mother. I don't want to reveal the gender. So during that session, I realized how ill-equipped I was as a counselor. You know, I could see how I was stumbling with words, how I was struggling to break this information to this patient, and how I wasn't even sure if this patient understood, you know. So during that moment, I realized that, there's a reason why we have counselors in our clinic. You know, they are so much better at this than I am. They do this on a daily basis. They know the right words to use. They know the right strategies, you know, to use in either breaking bad news or disclosing such information. Yes, most definitely. I have had those situations where I thought, one, someone else is better equipped than I am. And if that person was available, it would have definitely made my treatment of this patient so much easier.
Mm. And I mean, if there are any collaborations or improvements you would like to see within your profession, either from a multidisciplinary perspective or otherwise, what kind of improvements would you like to see?
I would really like the whole MDT approach, so the multidisciplinary team approach at most levels of healthcare. You know, this is only present at, you know, in bigger hospitals, but when we go down to our community hospitals, we go down to our smaller district hospitals, this isn't there. You know, kids come in malnourished, they are treated for whatever issues they present, and they're just sent home like that. We never address those issues, you know. So I would definitely want that in most institutions. But like I said, we are a very under-resourced country. The country is just struggling to employ these either allied workers or extra professionals. That would make work so much easier. But I would really want that. I would want to have a team of physios, occupational therapists, you know, psychologists, social workers available. You know, sometimes they're available, but they'll tell you, no, they're only coming for one session at the end of the month, you know. And like I said, if you've got a patient who's struggling with social issues, and like, oh, you know what, come back for the psychologist. She'll be here in 3 weeks' time. And I'm like, but doc, my employer cannot allow me to get another day off. You know, I already had to bargain for this day. If I get that day off, I'll lose my job, you know. So sometimes they are available, but not just as expedient as would want them to be, or as efficiently as would want them, I think, for lack of a better term.
I think that is a major issue that a lot of psychologists have been bringing, a lot of psychology students, a lot of psychologists currently in the profession have been bringing up, to say, you know, the lack of psychology professionals. I don't want to say clinical psychologists or counseling psychologists or registered psychologists, just the lack of mental health professionals,
yes,
in communities is breaking the system, because social workers, registered counselors, counseling psychologists, educational psychologists, you name them, if we had them working in communities, so many problems that we see could be alleviated, or we would see a reduction in a lot of the problems that we see. And I think you may also be able to, or we may be also be able to see that even at a medical level of things, to say, actually, if we had teams of people on the ground, educational psychologists in schools, counseling psychologists, you know, in township areas, registered counselors in youth centers, a lot of the problems that we're seeing could be quelled, and, you know, maybe there wouldn't be so much violence and hospitals wouldn't be seeing a lot of trauma cases, because you know, people drink so much over the weekends for whatever reason, and then that ends up in, you know, stabbings and all of these horrible situations. So that echoes actually a lot of what psychology professionals have also been crying out to say we need more psychology professionals to be employed in public sectors.
Yes, definitely. And I think you mentioned an important point. Is they should be, you know, because there are psychology professionals in the big hospitals, but we need them in the communities. Because if they are there in the communities, they prevent a lot of cases from actually going to the bigger hospitals, you know. And that, it helps. I mean, we've spoken about the social burden of our patients. Now, if this patient has to go and see the psychologist at a hospital that's 30 kilometers from his home, he's already struggling with food for, you know, with money for food and or money for transport to work. And then now you're putting this extra burden of going to see the psychologist who's 30 kilometers away. That just makes, you know, it makes it more difficult. Whereas if we had a psychologist in the primary healthcare setting, in the community, you know, if people were exposed to this discipline within the community, like, and you mentioned schools and all of that, it would definitely go a long way.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we're going to talk COVID-19 because, I mean, how can we not discuss the pandemic, right? So we're currently experiencing a global pandemic, which has affected all of us in some or other way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you are a doctor. You're in the front lines. You most probably encountered the full force of this pandemic even before any of us could even wrap our heads around, you know, what's going on or what is COVID, you know. So what do you think psychology professionals could have done for you, or how would the psychology profession have helped you in terms of dealing with the COVID-19 impact?
I'm not sure what to call it, lucky or blessed, or, you know, I haven't really, just by virtue of where I'm working, I haven't really been exposed to the full brunt of COVID-19, but a lot of my colleagues have been exposed to that, you know. I've got colleagues working in ICUs, I've got colleagues working, treating COVID patients on a daily, and I've spoken to a lot of them. I've spoken to a number of them and heard what challenges they're facing, how overworked and how burdened they are, not just physically, but emotionally as well. You know, the thing with COVID is, yes, some patients come in and they pass away a day after admission, but some patients stay in the ward for weeks. You know, you get patients that are in the ward for weeks and some even months, you know. So as a healthcare practitioner, you inadvertently just develop a relationship with this patient. You're seeing this patient on a daily. You get to know the patient's name. The patient gets to know you, you know. And if this patient suddenly demises, it's like losing a relative, literally, you know. It's like losing a relative. So I've seen the burden that this has had on my colleagues. And most of them, you know, have really told me that they need psychology. They need sessions, you know, with the psychologist. Luckily at Klerksdorp, this was provided. Prior to the pandemic, management did mention that, you know, the Department of Psychology has made themselves available to help any healthcare practitioner. You could call them and you have a session with them. Because, I mean, this is something new, you know. Apart from dealing with death, you're dealing with this stress, you're dealing with exhaustion, you know. So, and others are just dealing with anxiety about this COVID. You know, they don't know. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what impact is going to have on their family structures. So, yes, that definitely helped. And I know most people made use of that department, of the psychology department. It really did help. And I think it's beneficial, especially for healthcare workers that are dealing with COVID.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think any of us could have. I mean, this was such an unprecedented global incident. I don't think any of us could have prepared ourselves for what was going to come. You know, the effect that this COVID-19 was going to have, I don't think any of us had any idea how we would have been able to deal with it. But I think, you know, having a support structure that kind of helps you prepare yourself psychologically and emotionally for, you know, a wave that you don't know how big it's going to be. You don't know how wide it's going to be. You don't know how hard it's going to hit. But at least if you have a kind of support structure that prepares you for it, you feel better going into it.
Definitely.
Because you have tools now, you have the armor to deal with it, you know. So that brings us to the end of our discussion. And I don't know if you would like to maybe add something to what we've already discussed so far.
Oh, thanks for having me. I think you've addressed most of the issues. I think the main thing for that we can take out of this is just the importance of the multidisciplinary team, and to realize what role each team player plays in this team. And also, I think we just need to be educated more about the roles of each team player, realizing that I'm not trained to be a physio. I'm not, you know, I cannot provide the best care in that department that a patient could need. You know, it helps to have someone who's been trained in that field. I'm not a social worker. I'm not a clinical psychologist. So, yes, thank you for the session, Matsepo.
Thank you so much, James, for your availability and for your contribution to this important discussion and to our first episode as a multidisciplinary subcommittee. Thank you so much.
Thank you.